You are tuned in to Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
We're talking about workplace challenges for individuals with OCD in our mental health awareness challenge. Morning with Dr. Jerry Bezuidenhout, who's joining us once again from the Vista Clinic. Now, the workplace can be a difficult environment for someone managing OCD. From performance anxiety to specific triggers in the work environment, it can feel overwhelming. And so today we're going to discuss the common workplace challenges faced by people with OCD and how both employees and employers can create supportive solutions. Dr. Jerry, good morning. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good morning, Bongi, and good morning, listeners.
All right. So we're talking about the workplace challenges. What are some of those challenges that people with OCD face at work?
There's a couple of sort of specific areas that they struggle. So the one area is they sort of focus and attention. You remember the illness keeps you in your head, and you're busy with the intrusive thoughts, and they intrude. That means they override some of the other thoughts that you want to sort of engage with. And that can make it difficult for people to sustain their focus and their attention on a task.
Right.
And then often when people are sort of focusing on doing the compulsions, they tend to prioritize that task above social interaction. Mm-hmm. And that can sort of look like they're not really interested in having relationships. And colleagues can then also misinterpret what they are doing.
Okay.
And that can lead to sort of the stigma around mental illness. You know, that one is weird or crazy.
Yeah.
Or not really interested in having relationships at work with people. And that can then lead to sort of low self-confidence and then also low self-esteem because of those kind of strained relationships. And then, you know, the stigma is a big thing. You know, stigma is it's a dominant negative feeling that a cultural group or a group of people in a society have about something specific. So it's just a feeling. It's a negative feeling.
Right.
So that can have a major impact. And then because of stigma, colleagues can have a sort of prejudice against that person with mental illness. And again, if they misinterpret, you know, the person's compulsions. They're always busy cleaning the desk or rearranging everybody's desks.
Yes.
Then that can sort of lead to people thinking, well, this person is not really into the job. You know, and they're more focused on cleaning the table or being hand washing than actually being productive. And then you get timekeeping is a problem for people with OCD.
Yes, you know, they're
so busy with the compulsion.
Yes.
They struggle to be on time. And then just to be productive, you know, when you're busy with the kind of thoughts in your head and with the compulsions, it's very difficult to be productive.
Mm-hmm.
So those people are often very busy, but they're not effective in what they are doing always because of the intrusive thoughts.
Yes.
And the compulsions.
Sure.
And then all of that can increase a patient's anxiety and stress, which then worsens their OCD symptoms.
Exactly. It just becomes a never-ending cycle.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very, very sad cycle, actually.
And how does that affect productivity or confidence in the workplace?
Well, if I know I'm struggling, you know, people have got this subjective self-assessment that goes on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So people know when they're not functioning as they should be.
Mm.
And therefore, they struggle with that sort of self-confidence in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And then they tend to sort of, once my confidence is lower, I tend to be more reluctant to sort of express my opinion or to do a task independently. So I'll go and ask much more. And then, you know, that person, they can be so busy with the obsessions and the compulsions that they can't sort of sit and focus on the work that they have to do. You know, they're busy in their head.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I told you about my one colleague that had OCD that would sort of be in the wards until about 10, 11 o'clock in the evenings because he was writing the notes to a subjective feeling right. So there was no objective measures about exactly what you could measure himself against, but just the obsessions. And that was sort of really time consuming and took away some of his social time, or a lot of his social time, actually. And then, you know, he would be tired. He would go to bed late and then come to work late the next morning. They tend, you know, they can work, miss their deadlines, and they spend a lot of time sometimes on small tasks and, you know, lose the focus on what's actually important.
And what you mentioned at the time when you talked about your own experience and the fact that now everybody else would have to pick up the slack, I would assume that then also affects your relationships with your colleagues.
Yeah, very much so. Again, that prejudice and the stigma, you know, they're not doing their job. And when people don't, you know, we don't live life with the pathology book under our arm. Exactly. So we don't look at colleagues from an illness perspective. We look at it from a normal perspective. So then when that happens, we become judgmental. You know, frustrated. And that just makes it worse for that person. Yeah, very much so. And there's a lot of them that know, you know, remember, it's a part of the brain that's unwell. And a lot of these people are not stupid. They're intelligent. So they also know when they're not performing. That, again, creates low self-esteem. Another problem that affects their productivity is it's making decisions. If I don't trust myself and I have poor self-esteem, I tend to be more reluctant to make a decision. Because, you know, I have to get it right. And what's very interesting is people fall into this, because OCD is an emotional thinking problem. It's an emotional illness. And then people get stuck in that emotional thinking framework rather than the cognitive thinking framework. And the emotional thinking framework can't differentiate between the process of making a decision versus the decision. It's just it's everything or nothing. I make a right decision or I make a wrong decision. And that fear of failure or making a mistake then sort of can hamper the person to actually just make proper decisions and focus on the process of decision making and not just on getting it right.
And are there legal protections for employees with OCD?
There are quite a few, actually. I was actually surprised by the amount here in South Africa when I looked at it. You know, you get the Employment Equity Act. It actually stipulates that people with a disability cannot be discriminated against, and employers must sort of implement some affirmative action measures. There is a Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act. The Constitution, interestingly enough, puts the duty on the state to promote and protect the rights of persons with a disability. So they all work around disability. So that's a severe form. When someone hasn't been declared sort of disabled, you know, it becomes it's much more grayer. And there you talk about reasonable accommodation. You know, what can the employer do reasonably to accommodate that person with an illness? And the social rights, you know, people with disability have a right to fully participate in society. How that looks is often the issue, not the protection. And that's very important to understand. It's not a one-way street, because the employer has got the rights or the need to provide an area where that person can work. But there are limitations around that, and people need to understand that as well.
I'm glad you say that, because I was curious about what then is supposed to happen, because we know we don't want to feed the compulsion. We don't want to... You know, you already explained to us that that's often very, it's not helpful at all. So how exactly would we create an environment for, you know, and accommodations for someone with OCD without necessarily feeding their compulsion and while still also promoting productivity, which they might be struggling with? How exactly do we go about that?
I think that, good relationships and honesty, it's the basis.
Okay.
On both sides, what can the employer reasonably do to accommodate that person?
Okay.
Some of the first world countries, they'll put in a lift for someone and all kinds of stuff. But, what can we do in our current job?
Mm-hmm.
If there is a need for speed and you are very slow, can we accommodate that or not?
Okay.
And understanding from both sides that the employer can tell me, listen, I can, let's say for someone, really needs a space where they can sort of be alone and work instead of an open work environment, mm-hmm. or office environment, work in a separate office. If that is a reasonable accommodation and the employer is willing to offer that,
okay.
but the person suffering wants to actually work from home and the employer doesn't allow that, there must be reasonability from both sides.
Okay.
Sometimes, about the compulsions, mm-hmm. bringing in flexibility. If someone's pattern is that they struggle to get to work because their main routine is in the morning,
mm-hmm.
making it more flexible for them can actually reduce it. And then moving away from time to productivity. So I don't expect you to be on time, but I expect you to do A, B, C, and D.
Yeah.
So time becomes less of an option, and what we expect you to do becomes more of a focus point.
All right.
And that can work. And then sometimes just making it very structured for the person.
Mm-hmm.
Outlining exactly the steps that needs to be taken, because that overrides that emotional, I have to get it right. I can't trust my emotional thinking, but this is what the work expects of me, and this is the flow that I need to follow.
Sure.
And that can be quite protective.
Okay.
So the internal debate can be sort of pushed to the side.
All right.
What's interesting is some employers insist that the person with OCD or a mental illness actually go and see their therapist on a regular basis,
yeah.
and just report back that they've seen them.
Okay.
They don't want to know the details, anything less. They just want to know that the person is engaged with some sort of therapy and or treatment.
Mm.
And I think that's also fair.
That's fair.
Because if I'm expected, if the employer is expected to make reasonable accommodation, I think, the ill person can also accommodate them there,
yes.
without affecting their privacy or confidentiality.
Yes. Beautiful. And any other practical accommodations or adjustments other than the ones you've already mentioned?
I think it's sometimes good for the people to think about, what do I need?
Right.
Let's say I work in an open work environment, open office, and the noise distracts me, can I wear a headset with noise cancelling that I can listen to music that it calms me down? I can focus. Do they place me near a bathroom? So I can just walk down and wash my hands and come and sit again. I'm not wasting time.
Okay.
So small things like that can make a big difference sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, the one where you need wisdom is, what do you tell colleagues, and what does the boss or the supervisor tell colleagues about your mental illness?
Yeah.
Because you want to reduce the stigma and not increase it. And that can sometimes help, that your direct colleagues or the people that are directly affected by your behavior,
mm-hmm.
know that there's a mental illness, and therefore this is not just you being difficult, illness that interferes with relationships.
Right.
And this is the way, people can manage it. And again, it comes back to trust and good relationships.
Mm.
Other practical things can be that, limiting the amount of, let's say, desktops or pens or something someone has to share with other people. So that's more sort of a designated safe area. And one of my patients with OCD symptoms, they identified a safe, quiet space mm-hmm. in the building that when she gets overwhelmed, she just stands up and she walks there and stays there for 5 or 10 minutes and then comes back again. Mm. And there was no limitations placed on the amount of time she could walk there and come back.
Right.
The big thing what they did was to say, okay, they move to productivity.
Yeah.
So very specific outcomes rather than time at the desk.
Yeah.
Or time away from the desk. They just said, okay, as long as you do your job properly, we're okay with you walking around and, you know, creating a safe space where you can calm yourself down. Mm. And that was very effective in helping her being very productive.
All right. That sounds very simple.
Yeah. And one interesting thing is sometimes the work mm-hmm. needs to insist that someone comes to work.
Okay.
Because if I'm at a home, I can hide behind the fact that nobody sees me spending 3-4 hours doing rituals
right.
and compulsions.
Yeah, yeah.
And therefore not being, you know, I can't get myself out of it. So when the work insists that I be at work, that actually puts a boundary down for my illness. Which and I good. Have to learn, yeah, you know, it's very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the individual sort of engagement action needs to happen between the employer and the employee, and a regular review at, you know, what the things we've put in place, is it working?
Yeah.
Is it working for both parties? It might work for the work, but not for the employee. Or it might be great for the employee, but it's not working for the work or for the team, you know, for the organization or the team.
Right.
And then we need to adapt because it needs to be win-win both ways.
Yeah, yeah. All right. And how can workplaces become more inclusive, do you think, for individuals with OCD or other mental health conditions?
So I think attacking the stigma is one of the biggest ways we can improve people's mental health sort of and also inclusivity. I don't know about you, but I haven't been, you know, at a workplace conference or in a church sermon where they told us how bad it was to wear glasses.
Yeah.
So the fact that we've got poor eyesight and we have to wear glasses, that debate is gone. Mm. You know, it's socially acceptable to wear glasses.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, the thing with braces. You know, when I was younger, people were bullied when they wore braces. And now the kids, it's just sort of a social sort of prestige to wear braces because the stigma has been broken down.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of ways to break the stigma down. One is to, you know, educate people on mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
Because the better we understand something, the less the emotion is around it.
Okay.
And the more we can work with it. What we do at Svista is we've embraced the word crazy because, you know, we work, people say we work in the loony bin or, you know, our patients are crazy.
Yeah.
And by embracing the word, you know, we show people, you know, we've walked 1,500 kilometers. That is crazy. Jumping out of an airplane, that is crazy. Right. Falling in love is crazy.
Yeah.
And by using these sort of words for craziness, we are trying to show people that you can attack stigma by showing out the ambiguity of what is seen as crazy and then educating them on what is illness versus what is life. And you make people stronger. Rather than change the names or hiding it, make people stronger to answer questions, to explain in simple terms. And workplaces educating their staff on mental illness and how they accommodate people with mental illness just normalizes the fact that there's an illness.
Yeah.
And then you can work with it.
Right.
I come back to things as well. If we develop words in our own language for these kind of mental illness, we can work with it easier. You know, we stay to English, yet in lots of languages, these illnesses are new English words or new concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And cultures just need to develop words for that so that they can describe it to each other. And that can break it down into more sort of cognitive concepts rather than just emotional concepts.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Jerry.
Adventist World Radio, SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.